You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the complex world of enterprise identity, securing legacy web apps at scale can be daunting. Strata Identity makes it simple. With Strata, you can effortlessly integrate non-standard apps with any identity service, like MFA or SSO, with zero coding and zero hassle. Designed by identity architects for identity architects, Strata works with every vendor, standard, and app architecture. This means your apps can now speak modern protocols and integrate seamlessly with your chosen identity services. From securing on-prem web apps to migrating away from outdated identity providers or consolidating them, Strata helps you keep your complex access policies as you modernize your identity infrastructure and get rid of technical debt. Join leading organizations like 3M, Dallas County, and CIBC in securing your apps with Strata. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your identity security priorities, and receive a complimentary pair of AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Connect today at strata.io/cyberwire.
Microsoft springs its bear trap again and catches Fancy Bear. This time, the targets are more to the right than to the left. The U.S. Senate holds hearings on cybersecurity. Hacking back is expected to be on the table. The U.K. wants more sanctions on Russia. U.S. senators are looking into reducing sanctions' collateral economic damage. Operation Red Signature pokes at South Korean supply chains. Intrusion Truth doxes Chinese intelligence officers. And more news on medical device bugs. From the CyberWire studios at Data Tribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Tuesday, August 21st, 2018. Microsoft announced late last night the takedown of six sites associated with Russian influence operations in the U.S. Redmond's Digital Crimes Unit ran the operation, which concentrated on bogus sites established over the last few months to impersonate public policy organizations. This time, conservative organizations received attention. The Hudson Institute, a conservative think tank that's investigated corruption in Russia. The International Republican Institute, a democracy promotion not-for-profit. And three sites built to look as if they were affiliated with the U.S. Senate. The sixth site was non-political. It spoofed Microsoft. Microsoft initially went no farther than attributing the operation to APT-28, but others, and subsequently Microsoft itself, have pointed out that APT-28 is the same Russian government threat actor also tracked as Strontium or, our favorite, Fancy Bear. These are all, of course, associated convincingly with the GRU, Russia's military intelligence organization. So how do these takedowns work? Is this a case of hacking back, like a cyber letter of mark in reprisal? No, it's more lawfare than warfare. Not that this should take anything away from the people at Microsoft who executed the takedown. And let us say, bravo, Microsoft. What they did in this case, and they've done much the same in others, is to obtain and execute a court order transferring control of the offending domains to themselves, thereby neutralizing the activity. By Microsoft's tally, they've done this 12 times over the past 2 years, shuttering 84 websites set up by the GRU. Redmond quotes the special master, a federal judge appointed in the case, to the effect that there is good cause to conclude that these activities by the Strontium APT-28 Fancy Bear threat actor are likely to continue. Microsoft notes that both major political parties are being targeted, and the company expects the Russian threat actors to broaden the scope of their attacks as U.S. midterm elections approach. So, lawfare and not mark and reprisal. But there's some sentiment being expressed today on Capitol Hill in favor of legislation that would allow companies that suffered cyber attacks to hack back at their tormentors. Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, a Democrat of Rhode Island, issued prepared remarks he intends to deliver this afternoon at hearings of the Senate Judiciary Subcommittee on Crime and Terrorism, which is deliberating cyber matters today. The senator says, quote, "We ought to think hard about how and when to license hackback authority so capable, responsible private sector actors can deter foreign aggression," end quote. He calls this active cyber defense. Thus, he sees hacking back as a national security move. That is, after all, what deterring foreign aggression amounts to. Leave aside for the moment that this might be seen as what SES types, especially the lawyers among them, call an inherently governmental responsibility. There have certainly been private sector activities with national security implications before. Private military contractors would represent an extreme example, as would privateers, who've been out of fashion and legal authority since the latter part of the 19th century. But there are other examples. Before there was a well-established U.S. intelligence community, if you wanted to get something out of the ordinary done, the government was likely to retain a white-shoe Wall Street law firm, the way Teddy Roosevelt did when he wanted a canal in Panama. And of course, contractors play a significant role in U.S. cybersecurity. Booz Allen Hamilton just got a $1 billion task order under the government-wide Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation Dynamic and Evolving Federal Enterprise Network Defense contract vehicle. That's a defense award, not one for hacking back, but you get the drift here. And by the way, congratulations, Booz. And of course, Microsoft has been dining out on Fancy Bear takedowns for 2 years. So what would one want done that a law authorizing hacking back might enable? And that isn't already being done. Hackback skeptics point out the problems with turning computer network operators loose on one another. It might be difficult to contain retaliatory malware, and the temptation to hack back in anti-competitive ways might prove difficult to resist. In any case, we'll watch Senator Whitehouse's proposals with interest. Our hometown of Baltimore was a famous nest of privateers at one time, but that was during the War of 1812. Nowadays, people around here work under government-wide acquisition contracts, not letters of mark and reprisal. We continue to track reports of cyber adversaries making use of fileless malware to evade detection. Travis Rosick is Chief Technology Officer at Blue Vector, and he offers his perspective on fileless malware.
Cyber adversaries have been extremely successful using this attack vector, and it's gaining a lot more attention from the mainstream media. From a Ponemon Institute study, as well as a McAfee report stated that they're seeing a 425% plus increase year over year in the volume of fileless-based attacks. In the Ponemon Institute, they've stated that fileless attacks are 10 times more likely to be successful than more of the traditional file-based attacks.
Now, let's just back up a little bit. From your point of view, how do you define a fileless attack?
From my perspective and what comes to mind when I think of a fileless attack, so if you think of the attack lifecycle or the different stages of an attack, one piece of it, what they would consider fileless in nature. So from an adversary's perspective, that you know, the cyber defenders are typically in a reactive mode. And fundamentally, over the years, it's very much focused on using like signature-based mechanisms to identify attacks that have happened other places and preventing them from happening again. So adversaries are very opportunistic, and they leverage mechanisms that allow them to adapt and evolve rather quickly. So in the case of the fileless attack, there's no files written to the host or the disk. The part of the attack executes in memory only, and it also leverages trusted applications within a system. So a very common one is leveraging PowerShell. So every IT admin uses PowerShell within a Windows environment. It's a trusted utility, and it's used for lots of different things. So their sweet spot they like to target is that gray area. What makes it the most difficult to ascertain benign from malicious? They know that a trusted tool that's always going to be in the environment, you know, they don't have to download capabilities that could cause more attention to themselves, which makes it very difficult for an incident responder or an analyst to identify that the adversary is in the environment or acting. The other challenge is a lot of these things don't necessarily create logs or things to go in and look at to see what happened on the system, nor do they really leave a footprint to search for hashes or other mechanisms. So it's very difficult. So the legacy security industry, you know, from a signature-based, file-based model, has really been trying to catch up. And clearly, it's not catching up as fast as the adversaries are being able to be successful.
And so what are the successful ways to go at this? How can you detect a fileless attack within your system or your organization?
Like anything, there's no silver bullet to cybersecurity, despite a lot of marketing you see from different vendors out there today. And one of the most painful things is really good cyber hygiene, proper network engineering and design. You know, the key is always to protect your critical information and segmenting or isolating core parts of your business from the things that are high risk. So for example, part of your core IP or personal customer data that should be protected is air-gapped or, you know, very tightly controlled and restricted from the systems that, you know, surf the internet or receive tremendous amounts of email on a daily basis. So having proper network design is one good way to help do that. The speed of detection is always critical. So getting a heads up that there is some type of malicious code coming into the environment or to targeting endpoints within your enterprise, getting that head start to kind of do the analysis or do more focused monitoring of those endpoints potentially can give you a jump start to doing that forensics analysis or doing triage. Because if you try to respond to it after the fact, like as I mentioned before, there is really limited amount of data that's left behind. So without having those breadcrumbs and log files, et cetera, it's really difficult to really identify what happened.
That's Travis Rosick from Blue Vector. A British mission to the U.S. will push for more sanctions against Russia. Her Majesty's government remains rightly exercised about the Russian hybrid war that found its lethal way to English soil. The U.S. Senate is working to ensure that existing and planned sanctions don't rain collateral economic damage on U.S. and allied countries. And it's not all Russians today. Trend Micro has published a comprehensive look at Operation Red Signature, which they call, quote, an information theft-driven supply chain attack targeting organizations in South Korea, end quote. The campaign surfaced late last month. And Motherboard describes Intrusion Truth, apparently a hacktivist group engaged in doxing members of Chinese intelligence services. Motherboard seems convinced, based on their exchanges with Intrusion Truth, that they are indeed the hacktivists they say they are. It would be interesting to rule out the possibility that that group is a hostile intelligence service, an intelligence service hostile to China, that is. A thought experiment: one could hire a company to dox a hostile intelligence service. Would that be hacking back, or would that just be government contracting? Motherboard notes that some of the Chinese officers doxed subsequently showed up in U.S. federal charging documents. Coincidence or not, they're not sure. Finally, if you don't have enough to worry about, U.S. CERT is warning of vulnerabilities in Philips IntelliSpace cardiovascular and Accelera IntelliSpace cardiovascular products. Philips says it's working to squash the bugs, which appear mostly to be of the privilege escalation and admin credential varieties. If you want to make people's flesh creep, use medical device and hacking in the same sentence.
Today's episode is sponsored by SRM, your first call for cybersecurity and investigations. Threats today are evolving faster than ever before, and since 2005, SRM has pioneered tailored security solutions for global corporations and their executives. Whether it's defending against cyber attacks with their award-winning team of ethical hackers and incident response specialists, or navigating the murky waters of compliance and ESG challenges, SRM's insight and straightforward advice will help you navigate complex risks and emerge more resilient. their secret? A culture that nurtures the sharpest minds, giving them access to the newest technologies and the freedom to solve problems in new ways, enabling them to craft simple, effective solutions for your unique cyber challenges. Search Your First Call to discover how SRM can help your business. And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI. And I'm pleased to be joined once again by Rick Howard. He's the Chief Security Officer at Palo Alto Networks, and he also leads Unit 42, which is their threat intel team. Rick, welcome back. You wanted to sort of take us through an approach to buying cybersecurity products. You know, I think all of us who have mobile devices, we're familiar with app stores. And you've got this notion of an app store for buying cybersecurity products. So what's going on here?
Yeah, I think the industry is about ready to change, right? We are pretty much reached the maximum point of not being able to buy any more cybersecurity products. You and I have talked about this in the past, that, you know, small organizations, you know, with two guys and a dog in the back room, you know, they have 15 to 20 security tools deployed. Medium-sized companies have about 50, and big companies like, you know, big banks or big government, they have over 150, okay, security tools, and none of us can manage one more point product. It's too hard to do. In order to deploy their solution, okay, for as a network defender, I have to deploy it in my network. I have to give it complete visibility, and I have to have my internal InfoSec teams integrate it with all the other security tools that I have already deployed. When buying a tool that doesn't integrate, that puts the burden on managing all that all on your local InfoSec team. And like I said before, those guys just can't take any more work. So what I think is going to happen in the industry is this idea of a cybersecurity app store. And the perfect place to deploy these things is at the firewalls, okay? Because firewalls are everybody has firewalls, and they're at the exact right spot they need to be able to do any kind of interesting security algorithm that might show up, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason that is because of firewall vendors, Palo Alto Networks, but all the firewall vendors have been experimenting with moving their intelligence collection piece and their processing piece, looking for bad guys, up to the cloud over the last 5 years,
right?
We're all essentially becoming SaaS operators, right? Because we essentially have unlimited collection capability up there, an unlimited processing capability up there. Because if we tried to put all that down on a firewall, it would fall over because of too much stuff to do, right? So all of us have been doing that for the last 5 years, right? So, and then all of us have been experimenting with adding new functionality in the cloud, okay, meaning adding a new algorithm, a new application in the cloud so that we don't have to put that down on the firewall itself, all right? And so the next logical thing that we're going to start seeing here in the future is all the firewall vendors are going to be opening that up to third parties, meaning they're going to open it up to their customers, they're going to open it up to their partners, and if this goes the way I think it's going to go, they're going to open it up to their competitors. Because it's going to be it's going to work just like the Apple App Store. Your firewall becomes like the iPhone. And if you want to deploy, let's say, the next behavioral analytics engine, you can go pick the Palo Alto Networks app, or you can pick the Semantic app, or you can pick the, you know, Fred's app, you know, the guy down in the garage with two guys and a dog back there, right? You can run them all at the same time and decide which one you like and say, hey, I like Fred's. Okay, and just leave that one on and turn the other two off. And there's no fuss or no muss. You don't have to deploy a box. You don't have to train your staff. It's all running on the existing infrastructure anyway. So I truly believe that we're going to see a complete change, a complete flipping of the cybersecurity vendor consumption model. We're going to be at a spot where we're not going to, where we are today, where we can't add one more, we're going to be adding hundreds more because it's going to be so easy to do and to evaluate. So that's where I think it's going in the future.
So you think we're, does this require a certain level of standardization where, you know, for these, I guess in effect, the sort of plugins, right? I mean, they plug into your firewall and so the suppliers, the vendors would have to meet a certain standard to be able to work with Company X's firewall to be able to, I guess what's in it for them is opening themselves up to the to this market.
Exactly right. And network defenders are going to have to pick a vendor they like that does the basic infrastructure. And I'm thinking it's going to be one of the firewall vendors, right? And then once they choose that, they're going to trust that vendor to vet everything, just like most of us trust Apple and Google to vet their own apps in the App Store.
All right. Well, it's certainly interesting to think about. As always, thanks for sharing the information. Rick Howard, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, sir.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
And now a word from our sponsor, SpyCloud, the leader in operationalizing cybercrime analytics. Traditional threat intelligence is a thing of the past. Cyber criminals are stealing vast amounts of credentials, session cookies, and financial data every day, and it's hard to keep up. SpyCloud is the trusted partner businesses turn to fully understand their darknet exposure risk and neutralize threats before it's too late. SpyCloud alerts your organization as soon as an employee or customer's data appears on the dark net, so you can act faster than bad actors to prevent cyber attacks like ransomware, session hijacking, account takeover, and online fraud. With insights from the industry's largest repository of recaptured data, protect the digital identities and systems most important to your business. Get your free corporate darknet exposure report at spycloud.com/cyberwire and see what information criminals have in their hands today. That's spycloud.com/cyberwire.